the incident has serious implications for free speech. Catherine Hazuri of the Colorado chapter of the ACLU.
I think that it makes people afraid. It makes people cautious about what they're willing to say, and that is not free speech.
For Free Speech Radio News in Boulder, Colorado, this is Maeve Conran.
This is Free Speech Radio News, I'm Deepa Fernandez.
And this is radio station WUSB, Stony Brook. Time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour or a couple minutes less. And as always, it's been one heck of a week. One thing after another, you know. I go through the weeks and I hear all these things happening and I just want to go on and on about all of them. And of course, we only have this short amount of time each week to rant and rave about the state of the world and the state of things around us. So we just have to squeeze it in as best we can. But boy, there's so much out there. There really is. And, yeah, I've got my own personal things going on here. I've got a court appearance tomorrow for the RNC thing. Not quite sure what's going to happen, but there's been quite a bit of activity going on in the last couple of days down at 100 Center Street in New York City, side of the courtrooms. A bunch of trials are taking place, a bunch of people are pleading not guilty, and I have not heard of a single case where anyone has been found guilty at this point. I've heard of a bunch of cases being dropped. I do know, and this is a rather interesting story, I do know that the video that is up on our website, up at www.2600.com/RNC2004, is a video up there that I shot on 16th Street when the arrests went down. We played excerpts of the sound and all that kind of thing. They're using that. The police are using that, or trying to use it, to incriminate people, to get people in more trouble. They're actually trying to use the video we shot, and I think the audio too, to prove that people were doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And the funny thing is, you know, I've looked at that video many times, and about the worst thing I can see anybody doing is sitting down in a street that was already blocked by the cops. You know, the cops blocked the thing off with the orange netting, and then a line of people were chanting, "Whose streets are streets?" And they sat down, which was kind of pointless because the street was already blocked. And what was even more pointless was they stood up after about 30 seconds and just walked someplace else onto the sidewalk. So there was no evidence of any wrongdoing whatsoever. I'm not trying to say that I wouldn't have put it up if there were, because I was putting this up as a journalist to show what happened on that day. But I honestly, as someone who witnessed a whole lot more than was on the video, I did not see anything that that should have resulted in charges, except of course what the police did, and I'm not kidding about that. So I'll have my day. Well, I don't know if I'm going to have my day. Let me show you something that I've been experiencing. This is rather interesting. Outside line? Okay. I need to access my cell phone here.
You have reached mailbox number.
Wait a minute. That's not the right message. Let me try that again. Problem when you have all the beeps sounding the same like this. You can't tell if they're all correct. My phone should ring, because it's in my hand. There we go. That's my phone ringing. I'm going to send it to voicemail. I'm going to hit start.
Hi, Ivish26.
Okay, I'm going to hit start again.
Please enter your password.
Okay. Now I can enter my password on the air, and no one's going to know what it is, because all these beeps sound the same.
You have 9 new voice messages and 10 saved messages. To play your messages, press 1.
Record a message, all press 9. 2. All to 9. If you greeting, shut up for a second. 3. All 9 of these messages.
Options,
you can't get a word in edgewise. All 9 of these messages are from the same person. Listen.
New messages, Tuesday, 4:28 p.m.
Criminal de la ciudad de Nueva York, con un mensaje importante. Por favor, quédese en la línea.
It is important to know that hanging up the phone will result in further attempts to reach this number. Please listen carefully to the options and make your selection. To retrieve this message, press 1 now.
Es importante que sepa que si usted cuelga el teléfono sin completar las selecciones, continuará recibiendo llamadas en el futuro. Por favor, escuche cuidadosamente las opciones
y haga su
selección. Para escuchar este mensaje en español, marque el 1 ahora.
We are calling on behalf of New York City Criminal Court, calling with a message for first name
E-R-I-C,
last name
C-O-R-L-E-Y,
has a court-ordered appearance or appearance for a desk appearance ticket and must be present on
Wednesday, November 17th, 2004.
At 9:30 a.m. at Manhattan Criminal Court, located at 100 Center Street, New York, New York, 10013. Court Part
C.
If you have received a desk appearance ticket from the police and the date and time and court are different from the information you just heard, please follow the instructions on the desk appearance ticket. Thank you for calling the Court Appearance Validation System. Goodbye.
I didn't call them. I did not call these people. They called me. Repeatedly.
To copy this message to another person, press 6.
Listen, how many times they called.
New message, Tuesday, 1:03 p.m. New message, Tuesday, 9:04 a.m. New message, Monday, 8:14 p.m. New message, Monday, 3:47 p.m.
Criminal de la ciudad de Nueva
York. New message, Monday, 10:43 a.m.
La corte criminal de la ciudad de Nueva York.
New message, Sunday, 10:08 p.m.
La corte criminal de la ciudad de Nueva York.
It's kind of late, isn't it?
New message, Sunday, 6:03 p.m.
La corte criminal.
New message, Sunday, 1:24 p.m.
Llamamos en nombre de la corte criminal.
Saved messages.
Okay, so that's pretty much all the calls they made, but they made 9 calls to me in the last couple of days. I mean, this is ridiculous. Now, I haven't been able to answer these because they've been on my cell phone. My cell phone is off most of the time, but a couple of them came in while I wasn't paying attention, and I had the ringer off, so I was able to get the phone number. So what do you think happens when you call them back? Hang on a second. Whoops, dialed the wrong number again. Okay, let's get it right. 212-619-4482. Well, they called me. Oh, and it's busy. Either one of our listeners had lightning-fast reflexes, or they're busy calling more people. I called them a few times, And I did get through, and I get this machine that keeps trying to dial out. It's really something. And I imagine if you feed it a dial tone or confuse it in some way, they'll spit out all the information for somebody that, you know, you're not supposed to hear information about. It's a stupid system, and it's an annoying system, too. I don't understand why they can't just deliver the message and leave it at that. Why they even have to deliver a message in the first place. I have a piece of paper. Obviously, I'm responsible enough to know when I'm supposed to show up. Ridiculous. So, yes, apart from being spammed by the New York City Police Department or the court system or whatever, it's been a fun week in other ways, too. Oh, boy. Well, let's read some listener mail. Let's get that out of the way, because I'm just going to get so riled up speaking about the other things. And let's verify we're on the net, because we weren't last week. And it's always nice to know. Did I click on that there? I'm going to click on that. And I get another thing I have to click on. Okay. What do I click on now? I click there. Okay. So what do you think happens when you call them back? Hang on a second. Is that me? Whoops. Dialed the wrong number again. Yeah, I think that is me. Okay. All right. Yeah, sounds like we're online this week. So people from around the world can call in and voice their opinion on what we were talking about last week, which was the results of the election. And we've gotten a lot of feedback to that, obviously. OTW at 2600.com being our address that anybody is welcome to send email to. Here's something that I think would be very interesting to people who want to commiserate. Despite everyone's greatest efforts, we were, as everyone knows, unable to give society a clue towards how this so-called president wants to run this country. I wanted to share with you and listeners some pictures of support for anyone but Bush. This website has hundreds of pages of supporter-made pictures of apology for this poor country's fate. Hope everyone enjoys them. The address is... Are you ready? SorryEverybody.com. SorryEverybody.com/gallery. And actually, you have to type anything after that. Yes, you have to type a 1 after that. So SorryEverybody.com/gallery/1. And go take a look at that. Isn't that something? Pictures of all sorts from all around the world of people with their digital cameras. Dear world, please excuse our inappropriate election. A lot of us don't understand it either. With pictures of people of all walks of life just expressing themselves in whatever way they can. And you can probably be a part of this, too. I haven't looked up how to actually submit things. But, boy, there are 453 pages so far of this thing. That's a lot. A lot of pictures. And that's more pictures on each page. That's about, 10 pictures on a page? It's a lot. So I'm sure it'll get a lot bigger, too. SorryEverybody.com/gallery/1. Thanks, Jesse from Grimes, Iowa, for sending that one in. On November 9th, you raised the issue of Fallujah losing an H. After that, I noted that Yahoo News spells Fallujah with an H, while CNN spells it without an H. Signed, Justin. I'm sure, you know, there's more important things to be worrying about, obviously, but, you know, you got to notice these things. These are the little tiny things that people like us notice. And, yeah, a missing H. Who knows where it went? Why did it go? I don't know. Dear Off the Wall, I believe I'm correct in saying that the report you referred to in last week's show, or actually this was 2 weeks ago, about the 100,000 casualties, the 100,000 Iraqis killed, reporting by Johns Hopkins and various other sources. This also includes Iraqi forces fighting against the coalition at the start of the war and not just civilian casualties. This is just my personal take on the situation, but I think part of the reasons for the current troubles in Fallujah is due to the Sunni Muslims, who are a minority in Iraq, and of course they were the ones under Saddam who were the ruling group. They now feel they are losing out under the new ruling regime of majority Shia Muslims. Has the U.S.-Iraqi government made sufficient efforts to include them in the new administration? Such civilian casualties and abuses, such as at Abu Ghraib, only inflame feelings toward America and Israel in the eyes of the Arab world and encourage Islamic extremists. Signed, Beowulf. Yes, quite true. As to whether or not it includes the whatever armed forces there were, you know, it's not that big a difference. It really isn't. I don't know how many people in the armed forces actually were fighting at the beginning. And right now, it's really not easy to tell the civilians from the, what do you want to call them? insurgents, I guess is the word everyone's using these days. It's a very hard word to define. So, yeah, it's a lot of people. It's over 100,000 people one way or another. That's quite a lot for a country that wasn't posing a threat to us. Quite a lot. We'll get into that. Dear Emmanuel, my location is Australia. Thursday morning, last Thursday morning, I downloaded the latest Off the Wall. My girlfriend went off to play bridge. I was happily working. She reminded me I should be silent for a minute at 11:11 on November 11th. Because of Remembrance Day. I promised I would be. You told a story about the last song you were going to play, about the landing of the Anzacs at Gallipoli. And then you played Waltzing Matilda. Actually, it was the song is called, and the band played Waltzing Matilda by the Clancy Brothers. I look at the clock. It's 11:10. I decide to leave the song playing while I'm silent for 2 minutes. Life is full of strange coincidences. Signed, Edwin. Edwin. That certainly is... it's staggering to me to think that I can play a song here in Stony Brook and somebody in Australia will listen at some point, and especially listening at that particular moment in time. And what a song, too. Got a lot of comments about that song. Basically, a song about the horrors of war, the stupidity of war, and the tremendous loss for all the ages. Which brings us to the news that's been going on in the past couple of days. And boy, this is something that, well, there are a lot of things. There are quite a lot of events that have been happening. But let's focus on the most immediate one, which is the events coming out of Fallujah. Now, I've been watching what's been going on as much as I can. And it's been very troubling, to say the least. I've seen boasting and bragging about killing up to 2,000 people in 4 days. And I've seen reports of able-bodied males not being allowed to evacuate Fallujah beforehand because, well, they could be insurgents. So anyone between the ages of 16 and, I believe, 60 had to stay. So what I want to know is, how do you tell when you're mowing all these people down, when you're bombing them with your tanks, when you're dropping these mysterious sulfur bombs that are being used for the first time, how do you tell in the end who was a civilian and who was an insurgent? And what exactly is an insurgent? And is there some kind of combination of civilian and insurgent? And, you know, I don't think there really is a way. And I think what's being drilled into the minds of certainly the military, but to a lesser degree, the people back home. I say to a lesser degree because it's being drilled into us fervently, but it's not taking quite as readily. A lot of us are asking a lot of questions. Basically... A lot of these people are being targeted because they're simply in the wrong place at the wrong time. And when you see the reports that are going on over American media and over international media, if you have a means of getting that, you realize that the mentality that's taken hold in the military and hasn't quite taken hold here is that anybody who's there is out to kill them, is a terrorist. And, you know, you're tempted to have some kind of sympathy for that feeling. Yeah, these people are out to kill you, so you got to kill them first. But a little reality check is in order here. You're in a foreign city. You're in a foreign country. You're in a place where a lot of people don't want you. So, of course, there's going to be resistance, there's going to be fighting. How does that equate to the notion of terrorism, where people target innocent people? It's not the same thing. These are people fighting back. And, yeah, you know, a lot of them are very nasty people. A lot of them are bastards. They found bodies of some hostages there. I'm not defending people like that at all. But do you really think that there are 2,000 of them running around taking hostages and doing evil things like that? I mean, you can tell yourself that, and it makes it a lot easier to just, you know, wipe out an entire village. But how do you really know? And then we have the story that has hit the media in the last day. I'm going to play an excerpt from the video with the nasty words bleeped out because America can't deal with that. I saw it on BBC and the words were in. Like, you know, it's so stupid that we have to worry about that. You know, we can show people lying dead and wounded on the ground. We can show people being shot. We can describe violence of unimaginable proportions. But God forbid you hear the F word. Oh, man. That's it. We're coming for you in that case. So you won't hear that. Don't worry. But this is what happened a couple of days ago when two different groups of Marines converged on a mosque. Yeah, imagine that. They're just freely going inside mosques now and shooting people. That would have been unheard of even 6 months ago. And yeah, I know the argument for that. They're shooting at us. They're you know, taking refuge inside the mosque. The point is, why are they there? But let's not get into that whole question right now. Let's listen to this audio, and then we'll talk about what we hear.
The Marines are there!
Yeah, they're on the far right, far right.
Coming around the back! Hey, who's in here?
Coming around.
What the f*** are you doing in here? You got shot by tank.
Huh?
What?
Yeah.
Tank got shot up, I think.
Normal people tell us to come in here.
The tank did?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to tell those people in here to tell us to come in here.
Yeah, we had two on that.
You shoot them?
Yeah.
They have any weapons on?
That's the guy from yesterday. Same guy from yesterday?
Yeah. All right.
These are the ones from yesterday.
These are the ones that wounded and they never picked up.
Okay, well, I think the beeps kind of covered up a lot of what was important there. But basically, what you had was a Marine discovering that one of the wounded people that was left there for a full day, and that's something that the NBC cameraman who was filming this pointed out. These are the same people that were left here yesterday, left wounded yesterday. That in itself, I think, is unbelievable that wounded people can be left there for a full day. But it was noticed that one of them was still breathing. One of them was still breathing and was still alive. And that's when the other Marine went nuts, treating that as if it were a crime in itself. He's pretending to be alive. No, he's pretending to be dead. He's really alive. And you heard the shot as he executed him. Now, what I want to play for you now... Actually, there's one other thing I wanted to draw attention to in that particular clip, which no one else seems to yet. As they're walking into the mosque, one soldier says to another, We found two... I got to play this again. I got to get the exact quote correct. It's right at the beginning.
The Marines are there!
Yeah, they're on the far right, far right.
Coming around the back! Hey, who's in here?
Coming around!
This is when the two groups are meeting each other.
Got shot by tank.
Huh? What?
Yeah.
We had two in there. Did you shoot them? Yeah. What exactly are they referring to there? We had two people in there. We shot them. Yeah. And then after that, that's when they asked, did they have guns? Did they have weapons? Listen again.
Did you shoot them? They have any weapons on?
They asked if they have any weapons on them after. I mean, that implies to me that they're going around just shooting everybody. Now, this is the part that I think is really kind of shocking. This I got from CNN this morning. I'm waking up in the mornings now because I have to get up for this court thing tomorrow, so I'm all kind of messed up as a result of getting up at all different times. Plus, I made the mistake of watching the news last night before I went to sleep, and I couldn't go to sleep. I could not go to sleep after seeing that video and after hearing the news reports and seeing Condoleezza Rice's face. And it just, it's been very difficult. But this is something I woke up for in the morning, and I couldn't believe it, so I grabbed this for the program. Listen to how the CNN anchor stumbles over himself to try and excuse the horrendous actions caught on video of this Marine shooting a prisoner, an unarmed prisoner, at point-blank range because he dared to still be breathing. Listen to as he's interviewing a military person who, you know, his job is to do that. It's not the CNN anchor's job to do this, but listen to how good a job he does anyway.
We have spoken with retired General James Marks about the rules of engagement in this particular case and in others, and also what's at stake during urban warfare.
You can't remove the context. Those two are linked, and they will always be linked. Urban combat, like any form of combat, is confusing. It is soldiers and Marines on the ground pray for clarity. They pray for certainty. They want to make sure that they can see and act with confidence. And there is precious little other than confusion, especially at urban combat.
He goes into this building and he sees an insurgent who is still alive. The fear, describe to us or put us in his situation, General. What is it that he's thinking at that very moment that we maybe don't understand when he sees this this insurgent that's still alive? He says he's breathing. Then he says he's faking.
Put in context again what happened just the day before, where probably some of his brother Marines or Army soldiers on the ground were wounded and one was killed, when in the same incident, a dead insurgent had been booby-trapped. And so this Marine walks into that building with that in the forefront of his mind, plus he had just come from combat himself, the very violent stages of closing with and destroying the enemy, and he walks into a mosque, and he sees this insurgent on the ground. He really doesn't know what to think. There might have been a flash of light. You don't know what the circumstance is. I don't know what the circumstances are. And so the context is extremely important to keep in mind.
He was actually injured the day before. He was out on patrol, that Marine, on this day, even though he'd been injured the day before. So, you know, that probably brings with it some different levels of anxiety and stress. And as you mentioned, he'd lost a brother Marine the day before. On a booby-trapped dead insurgent's body. Boy, this whole idea of urban...
Okay, and it just goes on from there. But it's appalling to me that this reporter, so-called reporter, is bending over backwards to find all kinds of excuses. First of all, the way he even describes the situation, he says that they entered this building and found the insert... First of all, they walked into a mosque. Okay, let's describe the building properly since we know what it is. Let's not make it like a factory. It's a mosque. It means something to some people. All right, and... This so-called insurgent was certainly not an insurgent anymore because he had been disarmed and seriously wounded, left for dead, or left to suffer for a full day, whatever they decided to do. Very different. You know, when you describe walking into a building and seeing somebody that's an insurgent, yeah, you know, you have to protect yourself. But obviously, and we know this because we have the video, we saw the video, these people are just lying sprawled out on the ground. Most of them are dead. They don't have any weapons. Now, the mention of, well, you know, they booby-trapped some of their bodies. Well, this guy's alive. That doesn't even make sense. They should be shooting the dead people then. It's ridiculous to see this kind of reporting. And, of course, you know, over on BBC, they're asking the hard questions. Is this a war crime? What kind of penalties are we looking at? Who's going to prosecute? I'd like to know why in God's name this person is being protected. Why don't we know his name? You know, you do something like that, the world deserves to know your name. And I don't care, you know, I know war is hell. I don't know myself. I've never been in a war. And this really isn't much of a war, it's an invasion, as I've said many times. but I know it's tough. I know it's you're being shot at. I know it's, you know, a very touchy situation. But there are still, like it or not, rules. And this is a clear violation. And it's obvious, too, from the manner of speech, from the way people are talking to each other, that this kind of thing goes on. This is one instance that happened to be captured on video. Did you hear any cries of shock? Like, my God, man, what did you just do? No, nobody was amazed by that. The only thing different here was there was a camera rolling. So, after watching this last night and trying to go to sleep, I was thinking mostly what kind of effect that would have on the rest of the world, particularly the Islamic world. Seeing American soldiers just strolling through mosques now and causing all kinds of destruction and shooting people who are already helpless, indiscriminately firing at buildings and people, bragging about a death toll of 2,000. You know, these things do have ramifications. Now, if this were a real war where, say, Iraq had invaded the United States, and the United States was fighting back, trying to win our freedom, yeah, there'd be a lot more sympathy for these kinds of things. Not this kind of cold-blooded murder, obviously, but for the battles that we're seeing. But like I asked last week, do we even know what the people of Fallujah wanted? They couldn't get Saddam Hussein back, obviously. What was this all about? Did they just want the United States to leave their country? Well, you know, it's a good question. Why doesn't the United States leave their country? There'd be civil war? Well, you know, what we have right now isn't much better. Tell me the difference. I don't think 100,000 people would have died in the Civil War. Maybe they would. I don't know. It's just, I think the main problem right now, the thing that's unifying this country, is the occupation of the United States. And when the U.S. is driven out, if that ever happens, then there'll be some painful adjustments, but I think they'll get through it, one way or another. And what I believe the U.S. should do is simply pay restitutions, pump in a lot of money, fix what we broke, which is really impossible, and hope that 1,000 more Osama bin Ladens weren't born this past week. In the double speak of the week, this is a good one. After United States and Iraqi security forces declared victory in Fallujah 7 days after launching the largest military operation since the invasion last year. Oh, by the way, did you notice the end of Ramadan? You know, a very holy day, and that was the day that this video was released. Resistance forces struck hard in the central Iraqi city of Bakuba and nearby Bariz. And this is moving all over the place now. It's not just confining itself to Fallujah. But in Fallujah, Lieutenant General John Sattler, the commander of the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force, said, "The city has been seized. We have liberated the city of Fallujah." Well, come on, John. Which is it? Is it seized or is it liberated? It can't be both. You liberate something that has been seized. You don't seize it and then say it's liberated, because it's been seized. George Bush is spreading. And speaking of that, this is a great story that appeared in the last day. The English language is being destroyed by a deadly virus of management speak, which has infected the mouths and minds of politicians like Tony Blair and George W. Bush. That's according to a leading UK journalist yesterday. The British Prime Minister and his ally, the US President, are mangling the language, destroying its meaning by avoiding the use of verbs, twisting nouns into verbs, and endlessly repeating phrases until they become zombified. Is that a word? It's deeply depressing, said John Humphreys, one of Britain's leading political journalists and the author of a new book, Lost for Words. The book is about the demise of the language. Humphrey's book laments the growth of cliched, dumbed-down, inflated, and bogus management speak, which he says now passes for English. In particular, he criticizes political leaders for being sucked into using meaningless phrases and hackneyed mantras to disguise policies or protect themselves from accountability. Talk about great sentences. That sure was one of them. Humphreys has been a journalist for 45 years, and in his current post as a presenter on BBC Radio's News and Current Affairs program Today, he regularly interviews world leaders. The whole essence of a good, lively democracy is that one has good, lively argument, he told Reuters in an interview. But this kind of language kills real debate. And nobody is prepared to stand up and say, what does that mean? Because the assumption is made that if you don't know what it means, then there is something wrong with you. Humphrey said the original culprits in the destruction of English are business gurus who are trying to sell their own particular theories and have invented their own ridiculous phrases and vocabulary to accompany these theories. But for him, the more sinister development is that such language has taken root in political discourse. Humphreys picks on Bush, who once famously used the word misunderestimate, and pokes fun at him as someone who often speaks as though English were his second language. He also labels the U.S. leader a master of the language of political manipulation and accuses him of sweeping aside all the nuances of notions like freedom, truth, and democracy and instead firing the words out like dum-dum bullets. Repetition has taken them beyond cliché, Humphreys writes. They have become zombified words whose meaning is no longer the point. Blair, too, is singled out as a kind of, as a king, of language corruption. Humphreys notes that Blair's apparent fear of verbs, and mocks his speeches, which are peppered with verbless phrases like new challenges, new ideas, or for our young people, a brighter future, and the age of achievement at home and abroad. No verbs in there, were there? That's pretty scary. By using this technique, Humphrey says, Blair's is simply evading responsibility. The point about verbs is that they commit the speaker. Verbs cement sentences to their meaning, so it's not surprising that politicians tend to mistrust them. Fascinating. It really is. Can you imagine a report like that airing on American media? Oh, my God. The FCC would come down on them. There'd be boycotts by the advertisers. Humphreys also blames institutions like the European Union and the world's media for the decline in standards of English. He laments the inclusion of such words as, I can't even say this, pertanually? In the proposed EU Constitution, despairs that when concerns were raised, the word was replaced with, oh boy, insubduriance. He urges the public and journalists in particular to reject meaningless phrases and to demand they are explained. When you get enough people pointing it out, the public starts to spot what is going on. That's why the battle has to be fought. We should expect and should demand that when people are setting out policies or trying to persuade us of something, they engage in proper debate and don't simply give us a set of unchallengeable propositions. Amen. And that's what's happening. Zombified language, crazy policies, and scary people. Oh, my God, Condoleezza Rice. You know, she scares me. Bush I can laugh at, but Condoleezza Rice. Okay, if you haven't been scared by her yet, just look into her eyes. Better on video when she's actually moving around, because her eyes will go right through you. Especially if she's angry. Oh, my God, to be her enemy is probably the scariest thing in the world. And okay, if the eyes don't do it, look at the hair. The hair that can stand up to any hurricane that has come by this year and not move a millimeter. But apart from that, apart from the eyes, apart from the hair, it's the person. She's very intelligent. She speaks four languages. Was she a ballet dancer or something? She does other things, too, that are completely unrelated to being Secretary of State. Which she's been nominated today and will probably be accepted because the Congress is completely controlled by Bush, the Republicans. There's no need to even have a confirmation hearing. It's a foregone conclusion. But the intelligent ones are the ones to be worried about. Because her policies will mirror so closely that of George W. Bush that there's not going to be any debate of anything. That's going to be implemented very, very effectively. See, Colin Powell did a lot of bad things, but I always sort of felt that you know, he didn't really go along with this Iraq thing. I mean, he's a soldier, so he had to follow orders and all that kind of thing. But I always got the feeling that he was kind of reluctant and that he was somewhat in support, at least, of negotiations, of talking to other nations, of not simply ramming our policy down everyone else's throat. And now we have a real hardliner who's going to be in charge, and it scares me. It really does. That, and thinking about the horrors that are going on, the atrocities, they are atrocities. And I, you know, I cannot understand the justification machine, because that's what it is, of the Republican Party and of mainstream America now, the justification machine that will just simply sit there and say, well, you know, it's acceptable. It had to be done. And they keep saying this for everything that happens. They keep masking reality and cutting themselves off from the rest of the world. Well, the UN doesn't matter. We can do it without the UN. We don't need the rest of the world. We can do it alone. Bush won the first debate. It's obvious. And this little incident in Fallujah, well, the poor guy, he must have been scared. Come on already. Get a hold of yourself. All you people going around with your yellow ribbons on the back of your SUVs, think for a second about what you're saying. You know, I used to go around and say, yeah, I support the troops. Because what I meant by that was I support them being alive and not being blown away in some meaningless conflict someplace. I support them as human beings. I support them as people I know as friends. But I don't support what they're doing. I don't support this kind of thing. I don't support this military action. Now, is that a problem? Is that a problem when people say they don't support what the troops are doing? Because that is what a lot of people are saying now. A lot of people. You might be surprised how many. And we're going down a very dark road when these kinds of things become acceptable. It's not acceptable. Not by any stretch of the imagination. There's no excuses for this kind of thing. It's not just this one guy. It's obviously not this one guy. But this one guy did do something horrible. And just like the abuses in the prison were systematic, this kind of slaughter, this kind of cold-bloodedness is also systematic, because these people are not thought of as human beings. They're labeled as terrorists. They're labeled as people who will stop at nothing. Hundred thousand people killed. 2,000 in the last week. All right, 631-632-WUSB is our phone number if you have anything you'd like to add to this. I sure like to hear it. If you're one of those people with the yellow ribbons, I'd like to hear about those too. I'd like to see a different kind of ribbon. You know, one that says bring them home or something like that. I just hope people think before they follow blindly. There's a lot of blind following going on. It's unfortunate. It's good to see the military taking action against people who do wrong things. Listen to this. The Army is recommending punishment for about 24 soldiers from an Army Reserve unit in Iraq that refused orders to drive a fuel convoy because they believed it was too dangerous. No final decisions have been made, and none of the soldiers have been charged with a crime. But preliminary findings of an Army investigation faulted about 24 members of the 343rd Quartermaster Company, which is based at Rock Hill, South Carolina. About 18 of the 24 were held for nearly 2 days after refusing orders to drive a fuel convoy from Tilil Air Base, that's in southern Iraq, to a base north of Baghdad. Another 6 also have been faulted. Most of the accused face administrative actions such as fines or reduction in rank, although officials said it was possible that some could face courts-martial. That's how you're supposed to say that. Not court-martials, courts-martial. Under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the refusal to obey orders was deemed to be detrimental to good order and discipline. Yeah, the guy saying the emperor has no clothes, they're the ones that get punished. The guy saying, you know, this is crazy, this is dangerous, this is wrong. We need more people like this. Yeah, I know, it's not good for the military machine, but sometimes the military machine needs to be corrected. It takes a lot of guts. So, applause to people who have that kind of guts. And yeah, I've talked to a lot of people who are in Iraq. I've known people who go there, who've been there and gone back. And most of them, I would say between 70 and 80% of the ones I've talked to alone, think this is a completely screwed up, messed up policy that's going on over there. It doesn't make any sense. They feel bad about it. They don't want to be part of this. You don't hear this in the media, though. You hear about the people who will go back in a heartbeat. Yeah, I lost two legs, but you know what? I'm on the next plane over there again. You can't believe this nonsense. You can't believe this garbage. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. And you know, while I was criticizing CNN before, at the same time, I'm also going to be encouraging people once more to call their cable companies, to call their satellite companies, and insist that next month, when CNN FN goes off the air, it be replaced with CNN International. I called DirecTV today, and they don't have no idea what's going on. I had to tell them that CNN FN was going off the air next month. But they did register my suggestion / demand that they do this. Now, why do I criticize CNN and then urge people to get it? Because it's a different channel. It's not the domestic nonsense that we get here. And if you could see the two, you would know the difference. And you can see the two, actually. If you tune in to whatever channel you get CNN FN on, that's their financial news network, over the weekend, on Saturday or Sunday, you will see CNN International, and you'll notice the difference. You'll notice they have a whole different crew of people from around the world. You'll notice that they actually ask hard questions, and they have interesting programs. And you'll actually want to keep this thing on and feel like you're learning something. It's not quite BBC, but it's the closest thing we have in this country. Except it's not in this country. This is what gets piped out to the rest of the world. So CNN, I know, wants to have the cable companies and the satellite companies simply take CNN International instead of CNN FN when it goes off the air. And this is a great opportunity for us to get a window into what the rest of the world is hearing, something we don't have here. We have all these news channels. We have Fox, we have MSNBC, we have CNN, and there's probably others I'm forgetting. But they're all the same basic perspective. All right, let's take some phone calls. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
All right, listen, I got one of those yellow ribbons, but, you know, I actually took a magic marker and wrote on the other side, which is support troops or women, a black magic marker on it.
I didn't hear what you wrote. You're breaking up a little bit. You wrote what?
I wrote bring them home on
the... Oh, that's great.
Which is the same, which is what was passed around, I think, during the Vietnam War, if I remember. Everybody had bumper stickers like that.
Uh-huh. These ribbons, are they magnets or are they stickers?
They're magnets.
They are magnets, so they can just peel right off and there's no damage to your paint.
No, not at all.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I think it takes a lot of guts to say something like that, especially in this, you know, day of blind faith, I think, is what we're seeing.
Yeah, actually, I don't think it takes guts. I think it's, you know, intestinal fortitude. Well, I guess it's the same thing, yeah, guts. Intestinal fortitude is guts. So.
I'd be curious to see if, you know, that magnet stays on your car if somebody gets angry at you.
Yeah, you know, I thought about that as well, but so far, so good.
Yeah, you have to take a stand, you know? You can't put up with this, with people telling you what to think. You have to make up your own mind.
About this, I wanted to just go back a little bit in the show about what you told about that one soldier who was who shot that unarmed wounded guy.
Yeah.
You see CNN anchor was saying that he was trying to attempt to justify this guy's mindset.
He was basically trying to get inside the head of the soldier, but he just seemed to be trying so hard to justify what it was he was doing without even thinking that there was this guy just lying there that got shot at point-blank range and obviously wasn't a threat to anybody.
Well, I hate to call it a war, too. I really do. It's not a war. It's just a slaughter to begin with. But having said that, if this Marine or soldier got wounded the day before, you got to figure he's a little off to begin with. And maybe he shouldn't have been there.
Yeah, why was he there then?
If
he had been wounded, why was he there?
Yeah.
Definitely should not have been there.
So he's going to be a little... First of all, I think everybody's going to be trigger happy in that situation. I can't say what I would do unless I was actually put in that situation. But I can get a sense and a feeling that I think I would be extremely nervous and wary of everybody and anything around me.
Yeah, but if you look at the video, you see there's this strolling around the mosque, and nobody really seems to be worried about anything. The cameraman is saying, look, these are the guys that we left here yesterday. it wasn't a situation where they were being fired upon or they were on a battlefield. They were simply surveying the inside of the mosque. And they just noticed this guy is breathing. That's all. That was his crime, breathing. You know, he had no weapon. None of those people had weapons because they had already been shot. And they had gone through there already.
Yeah, I can't say what I would do unless I was actually there. But I can kind of get a feeling why he'd be extremely nervous. But again, the guy who's maybe he shouldn't be there right then. Maybe they should have pulled him back. Nervous and that trigger happened.
Judging from the reaction of the people around him, it was not an unusual reaction what he did. You know, and his reply, which I wasn't able to capture because they didn't air it this time when I recorded it, was simply, well, he's dead now.
Yeah,
you know, nonchalantly.
I heard somebody say that. He's dead now, yeah.
And, you know, nobody said that's horrible or objected in any way.
Yeah, well, you know, again, you got to remember, too, I would think if one person spoke out like that, whether they might think it, maybe there is one or two that are thinking that, but if they speak out like that, you know, that's going to cause a rift in the ranks and they can't have that.
No, they certainly can't.
And that has got to be thinking the same mindset or got to be acting the same way at least. But you might have a few people there who actually maybe are thinking that. We just don't know that. I'm sure one day we'll find out. You know, eventually some people will come forward and tell us about things just like it happened in Vietnam. You know what I mean?
Well, I just hope...
come forward and say, you know, it was a horror. We shouldn't have been doing this, but, you know, I was just alone.
I just hope people don't treat this like it's an isolated incident, like this is the one thing that happened. It's obvious that this is par for the course. This is pretty much what they're expected to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, again, this is tied into Colin Powell as well. I know he was real adamant about, if you're going to do this, you know, the rules of engagement are, if you're going to do this, you have to do it all the way. It's not done, you know, halfway with a little gray area. Do we shoot? Do we don't shoot? Do we shoot until we get fired first? It's either we do it or don't do it. And I think that's basically what's been, you know.
Well, you're talking about winning the military action. It doesn't mean you massacre everybody in sight.
Well, I know.
That's a very different thing.
Again, I'm just thinking, just from the soldiers' mindset, they know going in that this is where all the people who have been firing at them and set up IEDs are, where they found the rooms, I guess the torture rooms where people were actually tortured. This is the city which is causing them, you know, real thorn in their side. You got to know.
This is the city where some people were who were doing that, not the whole city.
You probably had a whole bunch of other regular civilians in there. I agree with you. But you knew that when they were massing to go in, that it was going to be bad. And, you know, this is not unexpected.
But, you know, I wonder now, okay, so they win over Fallujah. They control that city now. What happens next? They just move on to the next one and the next one and the next one. It just keeps going on.
I think you hit it right on the head. I think it's just going to be a never-ending guerrilla war. And it's just going to, just sort of sink the, a civil war, where
mm-hmm.
the Kurds are going to get in it, and, you know, and the Shiites, as soon as the Kurds, and then it's just going to become a bottomless pit, which it already is.
Yeah, and then you ask yourself, why was this necessary in the first place? No weapons of mass destruction, to get rid of Saddam Hussein, what? You know?
I said this to my daughter tomorrow. I said, can anybody say Vietnam? And then it's just going to get to the point where we're going to slowly pull out of there and just leave this country a mess.
Yeah, and say, well, the world doesn't appreciate us. We tried to do good, and look what they did. They threw stones at us.
Well, some people may think that, but I don't think that.
All right. Listen, we're out of time, but thanks so much for calling, and thanks for your sentiments. And, you know, I hope the day comes when cell phones don't do that. They don't keep breaking up and sounding awful. You know, phone calls sounded better 20 years ago than they do now. You notice that? Ugh. 40 years ago, they probably sounded better. Anyway, the thing is to keep all this in perspective, to not let it drive you too crazy. It's hard. You know, it's hard watching this kind of thing and not just feeling like we're all doomed. But talking to people definitely helps. Expressing yourself certainly helps. And not running away from it is also a very good thing, because if you do that, you're not changing anything. You're just pretending it's not happening. And it is. This is really happening, and it's got to be stopped one way or another. All right, I think we have time for one more, but it's got to be quick. Good evening, you're on.
Hey, what's going on?
Okay, you only have a minute, though.
All right, I just wanted to say, well, I'm only 19, and I'm listening to your show, and I think everyone with those yellow ribbons should just stop and think about how their kids might end up going to this war if they ever think of having a draft. And I think it's a really scary thought.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like my generation should be doing more and look at the past because there's a lot of bad stuff that went on. And
well, I know a lot of the young people are involved, but yeah, you're right. There could certainly be more. Certainly here at Stony Brook, we could use more. I hope to see that. I think, you know, there'd never be a better opportunity for people to organize and object to this kind of a thing because, yeah, the draft, how do you think they're going to fuel this war when they start running out of people, which they will do? The backdoor draft, which is getting people in who never thought for a second they'd be sent over to a place like Iraq, it's only going to work for a little while. People are going to stop joining these organizations.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hey, thanks for your thoughts.
Yeah.
All right. And I guess that's going to pretty much do it for us this week. I got a court appearance tomorrow morning, and we'll talk about that on Off the Hook tomorrow. I'll be on Off the Wall next week. Stay tuned for the blues. And try not to get too depressed. Yeah, the news sucks, but what are you going to do? See you next week.
Must be on the night the lucky strikes in the Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.